animals, vrattahai, with groups, anapade, in the matter of nonviolence, muni vrattahai, like the great sages, ahutam, as if invited, manyate, thanks. Pantaha, passenger. Yatra, where? Kokila, of cuckoos. Kujitahai, by the cooing. Translation. In such an atmosphere, even the animals of the forest became nonviolent and non-envious like great sages. Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone. Over and above everything was the cooing of the cuckoos. Any passenger passing along that path was invited by that atmosphere to take rest in that nice garden. So you can repeat. In such an atmosphere, even the animals of the forest became nonviolent and non-envious, like great sages. Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone. Over and above everything was the cooing of the cuckoos. Any passenger passing along that path was invited by that atmosphere to take rest in that nice garden. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A peaceful family with wife and children is compared to the peaceful atmosphere of the forest. Children are compared to nonviolent animals. Sometimes, however, wives and children are called swajanakya dosyu, burglars in the name of kinsmen. A man earns his livelihood with hard labor, but the result is that he is plundered by his wife and children exactly as a person in a forest is attacked by some thieves and burglars who take his money. Nonetheless, in family life, the turmoil of wife and children appears to be like the cooing of the cuckoos in the garden of family life. Being invited by such an atmosphere, the person who is passing through such a blissful family life desires to have his family with him at all costs. Ahutam manyate panto yatra kokila kujitahai. So omagana timirandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshur and miditam gena tismai shi gurve namaha. So here in this verse and purport you find describe the common dynamics of this material energy, which is basically happiness and distress, or alternating happiness and distress, sukha and dukkha, which occurs not only in the family life, but practically in every single circumstance. Whether we're talking about enjoying the eating process, or we're talking about enjoying any other relationship, there's a happy part of it and a distressful part of it. And they often alternate. It's, the example given is like the moon. The moon waxes and wanes, right? Waxing means it gets bigger. That's called the Gaurapaksh. And then the waning is called the Krishnapaksh. if you study the calendar. Gaurapaksh, Gaura, of course, means golden or bright. So that means the moon is becoming brighter and brighter and brighter and golden, golden, golden. And then the Krishna, in one sense, means dark. Of course, we also know that the word Krishna means attractive. He who attracts the all-attractive feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, so Krishna means getting darker and darker and darker. So happiness and distress follow each other. just like birth, death, disease. It's old age. It's a cycle that naturally occurs. It's a very interesting aspect of this material world. And as far as the modes of nature are concerned, we find Krishna's description in the Gita that sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent. Here, the mode of goodness is sort of being described. In goodness, everything is peaceful, and the forest and the cuckoos are cuckooing, or cooing, as the case may be. The cuckooing, that's onomatopoetic. That's a fancy word, which means that the word itself sounds like what it means. It's like bow wow, or cuckoo, or different words, or bell, you know, has a ringing sound to it. A lot of English words are like that. So the mode of goodness is something like that. Cuckoo. And so even if you're in the forest, let's say you're in the forest, take this example here, or this metaphor here, that you're in the forest and the birds are cuckooing, and the breeze, the gentle breeze is flowing through the trees, and everything just seems beautiful. Then what happens? There's a storm that comes, you know, like a hurricane, and all the trees are knocked down. Just like one time, many years ago, before you were all born, we had a big hurricane. I was living in the forest there, and I was so happy living in the forest with all the cuckoos and everything. Of course, there's other cuckoos, too. Yeah. But so we were so happy living in the forest. And then there was a big hurricane one morning. I wanted to go to Mangalarti. And I had to climb over all these trees, scratch myself. Of course, that's better than Bilva Mangal Thakur, who scratched himself, you know, grabbed a serpent, grabbed a dead body to cross the river just so he could see Chintamani. So I did basically the same thing so I could see Krishna in the morning. And so I came to Mangalarti. I think I was 1 minute late or something like that. Anyway, I was very unhappy because I was 1 minute late. But still, the point is that all this beautiful stuff in the forest that I was enjoying was destroyed by this hurricane. Sometimes we had a hurricane. Other times we had a tornado. You know, one night I was sleeping peacefully in the forest. And I felt like a railroad train was coming, and I was on the tracks. So the whole house started shaking. The train got closer and closer, and the tornado just narrowly missed me. It sort of chewed up the power towers, you know, that carry the lines up there, and they were twisted like pretzels. When we woke up in the next morning, we looked out, it was like that. So, you know, one moment everything's peaceful, next moment, you know, the tornado comes through. So anyways, let's talk about the modes of nature first before I get on with the discussion. So the modes of nature, sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, the mode of passion comes and competes with the mode of goodness, or the mode of ignorance comes and competes with the mode of goodness or passion. And in this way, Krishna says in the Gita, the modes of nature are in constant struggle for control or supremacy. So they're being pulled one. So in other words, you don't have a stable situation in the mode of goodness, as much as you'd like it, whether it's family life, whether it's, you know, your physical well-being. Like sometimes, for example, I'm thinking there's no pain in my body, everything's all right, you know, and basically I'm sitting nicely, you know. And then other times you can't sit properly. Or just like yesterday, I was informed that Mahamantra had some tooth problem. So these things happen, you know, toothache. And the jaw swells up. All of a sudden, you know, you're enjoying eating, isn't it? You know, using the teeth to chew. That's what the teeth are for. Unless you happen to be a monkey. Then the teeth are for biting your enemies. So you're using the teeth to chew and enjoying life, and all of a sudden this violent pain overcomes you. Anyone here ever have a toothache? I'm sure you all have sometime or other. You know, this violent pain, and then you can't enjoy the eating anymore. You know, all this enjoyment goes to hell, basically, just because there's some little change in the body. And it will happen, whether it's a toothache, a heartache, a headache, a neck ache, a stomach ache, a leg ache, you know, arthritis, a rheumatism, backache. I mean, isn't it, huh? Just when everything was going well for you. It's when you're on top of the world. Or let's say youth. Okay, we got some people. I think one person was young in this room. Two people. So let's say you're young. Like Lakshmi's young, right? And Radharani. And Mr. Tripta's young. You know, we got a few young people here. The rest of us are pushing it. So let's say you're young and everything is just like so wonderful. Now you have your whole life to look ahead to you. Everything's joyful. You can do all these wonderful things. And then what comes along is middle age. Then you get your middle age crisis, you know, midlife crisis. And then you get your old age crisis. And then, you know, things just don't work well. Even if things have worked well up to this point, things just don't work well in the body anymore. You know, what happened? What happened? It's not working anymore. You know, just replace the parts. So it's just like that. There's no stability in the material world. It's like that pre-Socratic philosopher said, I think it was in Athens, he said, you can't step in the same river twice because everything just keeps flowing. It just doesn't remain stable in this world. So that's a constant common denominator for all things, whether it's relationships or interaction with the material energy or just interactions with your own body and mind. You know, the mind, too. You know, sometimes the mind's peaceful, sometimes the mind's agitated. And, you know, especially talking about the moon, when it's the full moon, the mind becomes more agitated. That's why they have lunatics who become more agitated. So anyway, that's the nature of the material world. And that's shown by several Shastric examples in this particular point. Even you have Lord Ramchandra's pastimes with Sita Devi. Okay, so Lord Ramchandra wins Sita Devi at the Sita Swayamvara. You know, it's a very romantic thing. He is able to string the bow, and actually the bow breaks because the bow was Lord Shiva's bow, and the bow doesn't want to be used against Lord Shiva's devotees like Ravana. Anyway. So he breaks the bow, so romantic, and he gets married to Sita, so romantic, and then all of a sudden, what happens? Dasharath has been cursed to, you know, sort of die from feeling separation from his son. So Lord Ramchandra has to be exiled to the forest. You know, he's enjoying like anything, you know. He's going to be crowned the king, right? Or emperor. And all of a sudden, Kaikeyi has to step in with Mantura. And they say, you know, basically we want Ram exiled to the forest, 14 years, Dandakaranya forest. We want Ram not to accept the kingdom. We want Bharat to be crowned. And all of a sudden, all the good fortune ends like that. And then there's Ram and Sita in the forest. All right, so they go in the forest. And, you know, then they start, after a while, they start to enjoy themselves in the forest again. You know, things are very nice. The birds and the bees and Lakshman is there to help them, of course. He constructs the cottage, and they're just sitting there in the forest enjoying. And then Sita sees this beautiful golden deer. Oh, please get him for me. And what happens? Then she gets kidnapped. So then, you know, there's happiness. And then what happens? Distress right afterwards. She gets kidnapped. All right, so kidnapped. And then Ram plans out how to get Sita back. He gets the monkeys. There's all this heroism and everything like that. And he gets Sita back. And then he sends Sita into the fire to be tested. Another agony. Then he's tested. All right, he comes back with Sita, gets coronated as the king. Everything's all right. Then Ram happens to hear that the citizens are criticizing him. He's setting a bad example. So then he's put into this conflict. You know, We should understand there's actually a conflict there. That's really what causes distress. That's really what causes more distress. If you have a conflict between at least two or three different options, like approach, avoidance, or avoidance, avoidance. When I studied psychology in university, we studied conflict theory. That is, they said that most psychological aberrations are there due to different conflicts. You know, you have two choices that are good, or two choices that are bad, or one choice is good, another choice is bad, but still you have to do it because it's dharma. So Ram had this thing about dharma. This thing, anyway. He had this, he came down to show dharma. And so it was a conflict. You know, he loved Sita Devi, and therefore, he had this conflict between should he keep Sita Devi and not do his duty as king, or should he send Sita Devi away, which meant not doing his duty as husband, and do his duty as king. You know, just a complete agony for Lord Ram, isn't it? It's really interesting. Actually, there's one story that's told that Ram had to send his wife away because he was cursed by Brigha Muni. That Brigha Muni, one time, Brigha Muni was married. Not one time. But anyway, he was married, and some demons who were running away from the demigods took shelter in Brigha Muni's house where Brigha Muni's wife was. So Lord Vishnu, in attacking everybody, happened to kill Brigha Muni's wife. Of course, she also deserved it. There was another reason for that. And so Brigha Muni got angry and cursed Lord Vishnu that you're going to have to be separated from your wife. Anyway, these are pastimes. These are all pastimes, like Brigha Muni kicking Lord Vishnu, or Brigha Muni becoming the hunter that shot Krishna in the foot, Hunter Jara who shot Krishna in the foot. These are all pastimes. We can't understand these things through mundane vision. So Lord Ram then was in this conflict. Then he had to send Sita Devi away, and it was just like an intense agony. So even we see in these pastimes between Ram and Sita, there's a mixture of intense happiness and intense distress. So it's really, in the material world, the more intense the happiness is, the more intense the distress will be. That's the interesting thing. It's a balance, it's a scale. Like how, if you have heavy weight on one side, to balance it out, you've got to have a heavy weight on the other side. So we see that, let's say, the most enjoyable thing in this world for the conditioned souls is a relationship between men and women. I mean, that's just like, you know, love makes the world go round, as we were talking about yesterday. Or, like Prabhupada said, that attraction between men and women is the root cause of economic development. In other words, keeps everybody working. I mean, you wouldn't have to work that hard. You could at least have half job, you know, half-time jobs. You wouldn't have to work 12-hour days. You could just work 4 hours just to get enough vegetables for yourself. So because that's the most attractive feature, there will also be the accompanying misery to the same degree. It's interesting. As much as enjoyment you have or you want to have, that's as much misery that balances it out. And we see that. Let's talk about household life. It's talking about here that it's very peaceful sometimes, but then the kids get sick and you're in complete anxiety, isn't it? Like when the child gets sick, it's so much anxiety. Like if someone get sick who you don't know anything about. I mean, it's all right. You read it in the news or something like that. It's like yesterday I was reading some news report about how people go swimming during the summer and they go in these freshwater lakes and there's this amoeba called a brain-eating amoeba. Anyone's read about that before? It goes up your nose when you're swimming and it eats the brains. I mean, it happens. So I read about it. You know, I felt bad for the people whose brains were eaten because they died. But, you know, because there was no attachment there, it wasn't that intense. It was, you know, I felt compassion and everything like that. But if it happened to be someone who was near and dear to me, then it would be so intense and so painful. So the point is, in the material world, the closer relationships you have with people, the more pain there is in those relationships. Or harsh words, for example. Like if I'm on the street and someone says to me, you know, you're ugly or something like that or whatever. You know, it says, oh, Hare Krishna. But if someone who you care about and you're close to says, not you're ugly, but if he or she says something, you know, really intense, you know, like, you're not Krishna conscious, you're just a rascal, then it's really painful. It's really painful. So the closer you are, the more pain there is in relationships. More pleasure and the more pain. So that's there. Oh, my gosh, that's there because the material world is a world of duality. But it's also there in the spiritual realm that you see between Radha and Krishna. Or we talk about Sita and Ram again. Or Radha and Krishna. Because the relationship is the highest relationship. When there's separation, what happens? There's more pain, intense pain. Like you have in the Vidagdha Madhava, you have Radharani experiencing so much pain from Krishna when Krishna leaves Vrindavan that she enters into the Jamuna River and to leave her body. Or Krishna in the middle of the night, even though he's happily married, he's crying out the name of Radharani and the other associates in Vrindavan. It's, you know, intense pain. Or in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you have Krishna just like going into a coma, basically. Narada Muni comes to see Uddhava. Uddhava's at Krishna's house along with many of the other residents of Dwarka. And they're outside of the bedroom. That's not outside of the house. And just in complete anxiety because Krishna has not woken up that morning. I mean, he's basically in a coma. He's crying. And he's so intense that even when he does wake up, they have to figure out, you know, how to deal with Krishna's instability, Krishna's depression. You know, there's Krishna in a depressed state. And there's some talk, well, Krishna should go back to Vrindavan. And then this nice lady, Padmavati, who is the mother of Kamsa. Padmavati. Anyway, so this nice lady, Padmavati, says, is all worried that Krishna will go back to Vrindavan. She says, no, don't send him back. Just send him some money to swaj them, you know, so to pay for Krishna's upkeep. You know, he was there for so many years. We won't even charge them for Krishna's taking care of the cows for so many years. Krishna took care of the cows and calves and everything else and protect the residents of Vrindavan. So we're not going to charge them for that service. So we'll just send them some money, just keep Krishna here. So, but Krishna's in so much pain. You know, literally pain. It's interesting, isn't it? That they have to send Krishna to this Nava Vrindavan, where Krishna interacts with basically statues constructed by Vishwakarma, statues of the residents of Vrindavan, and tries to, let's say, enter into his childhood pastimes once again until he's reminded by seeing Dwarka when he goes to the shore of the ocean, which he thinks is the Jamuna River. Then he's reminded about that, and then he has to go back to Dwarka. So even you see that in the spiritual realm, intense pain, isn't it? So there's intense pain and intense happiness. So, and even in Brihad Bhagavatamrita again, you hear about the residents, even in the spiritual world, how they see Krishna enter into the Kaliya lake, and then they think Krishna is going to die, and they're fainting, and they want to enter into the river to save Krishna. Balaram keeps them from entering the river. And Krishna puts them in so much pain. And then, Balaram says, Krishna, These are not the monkeys and or just, you know, your, of your other pastimes. These are the residents of Vrindavan, and they're going to die. You know, stop playing around. Isn't it? Stop playing around. And then Krishna says, all right, I'll take care of this Kaliya serpent. And then Krishna pulls the gopis, and he and the gopis dance on the top of the Kaliya serpent's heads. And then there's intense happiness after that point. So you see this duality is there, even in the spiritual world. Of course, let me clarify things. That duality, that intense pain in the spiritual world, is ecstasy. You understand? Whereas intense pain in the material world is anything but ecstasy. It's painful. Unless one takes some pain and austerity to please the Lord, then it's actually helps one advance spiritually, and then it's actually part. Like, let's say if you do some austerity, you tolerate something that's intolerable. I know that we have to tolerate many things that are intolerable. Intolerable means you can't tolerate it, and tolerate means you are tolerating. So if you do that for Krishna for a higher purpose, then there's actually pleasure in there. When you do something that goes against your material grain to please Krishna, and you take some pain, as they say, no pain, no gain, then there's actually some happiness. So you can even experience that. But what to speak of in the spiritual world, where there's intense pain of separation or intense pain of anxiety over Krishna or something like that, then that intense pain is ecstasy. So the pleasure is ecstasy and intense pain is ecstasy. They're all bhavas, spiritual bhavas. Just like we were talking about yesterday about the indirect bhava, or indirect rasas, sorry. Like there's ghastliness, there is fear, bhaya, right? There's not only like things like humor and chivalry, but there's ghastliness and fear. Fearful Krishna. Basically, in the spiritual world, you're fearful for Krishna. You're not fearful of your own safety, but you're fearful that Krishna will get hurt. The gopis are even intense fear, feeling that Krishna is walking in the pastures where there's so many thorns, and he's walking barefooted. The reason Krishna is walking barefooted is that he says the cows, they don't have shoes, so why should he be better than the cows? Because the devotees said, you know, why don't you put some shoes on, Krishna? And Krishna says, the cows don't wear shoes. Why should I wear shoes? So the gopis are experiencing that intense pain just thinking about Krishna going out there, isn't it? That's love. So where there's love, there's intense pain. So anyway, getting back to the point, that the spiritual world, that's nice. The material world, your intense pain is intense pain. And your intense pleasure is simply ignorance. It's ignorance because, why do you say ignorance? When you were ignoring. You know, ignorance means you're ignoring something. That means you're ignoring the nature of this world. Your pain ceases for a few seconds, like Lord Chaitanya gave the example of the dunking stool, how they would punish people in India and also in the United States, by putting them underwater until they practically drowned, and then pulled them up, and then thought they were enjoying just because they were breathing. So that's the intense happiness in this world. It's simply like described here. It's very peaceful. It's a relief, because it's very peaceful. Because it's actually like a negative definition. Listen to this. And in such an atmosphere, even the animals of the forest became non-violent and non-envious. That's negative. Nonviolent is a negative. That means it's a negation of a bad thing. It's not a positive thing. And non-envious, like great sages, not envious. So in other words, naturally they're violent, and naturally they're envious. So for some time, they became nonviolent and non-envious, so there was a relief for some time. Consequently, the animals did not attack anyone. That doesn't mean the animals wouldn't eventually attack someone. That just means for some time they became like that. So that's happiness in this world. For some time, you don't feel envy. You know, sometimes I don't feel envy when I'm sleeping and eating and things like that. And when things are peaceful, when I'm in a mountain looking at the... not Govardhan, but when Govardhan is spiritual. So, you know, I'm looking at... Oh, just like, you know, because I'm learning certain photography things right now. So I was looking at some beautiful photographs. I felt very peaceful looking at photographs and mountains and streams and waterfalls and everything like that for some time. But my natural nature is envious and violent. So that's the way the material world is. That's the material happiness. So anyway, so how the question is, yeah, so here's the final statement here. Any passenger passing along that path was invited by the atmosphere to take rest in that nice garden. So in other words, the material world is arranged so that you have this mode of goodness thing, so you relax and take it easy in the material world. And Prabhupada said, an easy life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. And so you tend to relax your guard and not become so intense in Krishna consciousness. So that's the problem. That's the problem. So what do we do about this whole thing? First of all, what we do is we have to hear about the dualities of this material world continually. That's why Prabhupada preached about these things rather than, you know, simply preaching about the spiritual realm, what's happening in the spiritual realm, the Radha and Krishna and everything like that, because then we would forget. So we have to be constantly reminded about these things, which Srila Prabhupada did very, very nicely. And we should be introspective and examine our own lives and see how these things are going on. That's one thing. And in addition to that, we should be absorbed in the Lord's pastimes, in the intense anxiety in the Lord's pastimes, and the intense happiness in the Lord's pastimes. If we're absorbed in that original source of the dualities of this world, that the spiritual source of all those things, then we won't experience the dualities in this world anymore. You understand? So just like that devotee, Lord Chaitanya, came across, who was absorbed in intense anxiety because Sita had been kidnapped, and he wouldn't prepare prasadam, he wouldn't eat or anything like that, or he wouldn't even cook for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much experienced that, appreciated that, sorry. He very much appreciated that mood of devotion. So anyway, so this will help us. Otherwise, when everything is just there, very sweet and wonderful, and the cuckoos are cuckooing, we're going to... I know they're cooing, but cuckooing is the same thing. We're just going to be enraptured again and forget about our real spiritual nature and our goals in life. So any questions or comments? We've got about 2 minutes left. Yeah. Yeah, both can distract us. But the difficulties can actually help us advance. Because if we push forward in spite of the difficulties and happinesses, then, of course, Lord Brahma says that Tatenu come from Shushumikshvana, Bunjalabhatmakutam vipakam, Pitbhag bhapurvi, Vedanam namaste jiveta yo mukti pade, Sudayabhak. That he says one... pushes forward and goes on serving Krishna with his mind, body, and words. In spite of all these difficulties, he becomes the rightful inheritor or proprietor of pure devotional service. So it's a special opportunity. Difficulties are an opportunity for us to advance. And also, you know, happiness is an opportunity for us to advance too, so we don't forget. But difficulties sort of like sharpen the knife of devotional service. Like, if you want to sharpen your knife, you've got to just, like, rub it against the grinding stone. So these difficulties, when things happen, when people attack us, and people, you know, things are just going, everything seems to go bad. Was that Murphy's Law or something like that? If something can go bad, it will go bad. That's a special opportunity. We should see. There are no difficulties. There are opportunities in Krishna consciousness. So, I mean, that's hard to see all the time. It's a fact. But we should take advantage of opportunities to become Krishna conscious. So on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.